Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Capital One's tech team isn't just talking about multi-agentic AI. They already deployed one. It's called Chat Concierge, and it's simplifying car shopping. Using self-reflection and layered reasoning with live API checks, it doesn't just help buyers find a car they love. It helps schedule a test drive, get pre-approved for financing, and estimate trade-in value. Advanced, intuitive, and deployed. That's how they stack. That's technology at Capital One.
The stubble's good.
You think?
Yeah. It's rugged.
Yeah, that's
good to change things up sometimes.
That's the term that people use to describe me, rugged. Welcome back to another episode of the Mac Rumors Show. I am Dan. We have Hartley here as usual. And today we're just a couple of rugged guys getting ready to talk about WWDC and all the other news that we had from Apple this week. But let's start with the main, which is WWDC 2026. Obviously, this is one of those weird Apple events where we kind of know in advance before the media invites officially go out what's going to happen. And for most Apple invites, we kind of know already. But, you know, we have to speculate on the date and things like that. But with WWDC, Apple announces the schedule. We know the week that it's going to happen. So it's pretty easy to say, you know, June 8th is going to be the keynote, and it's usually at 10 a.m. Pacific. And so we got all of that confirmed. Media invites went out officially. I will be in attendance, which is always great. We'll be able to see all this stuff firsthand. And we're expecting iOS 27, iPadOS 27, et cetera, et cetera. Now, my favorite thing to do is look at the media invites and see if there's anything we can pick out. Unfortunately, this was the same exact graphic that they used for the initial like announcement. There was no, I guess I never looked back. Do they always do that or do they usually spice it up? I can't remember.
No, I think they're usually pretty similar. I think the difference this year is that the design they're going for is quite understated. It's very monochromatic.
Very minimal.
It focuses on a sort of glow. We did see an animation for the Swift icon, which is kind of reflective and mirrored, which is a little different to what we've seen before. It looks a little bit like liquid glass, but if it's sort of metallic, which is interesting, and it makes you wonder if that's maybe what they're going to lean into with the new Siri animation.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the rumor and everybody's speculation is that this glow that we see, the ring around it is the dynamic island. You know, that's been the heavy rumor that Siri would live in the dynamic island. I'm kind of always hit or miss with these. Sometimes I just feel like it's just is what it is. It's the design that they went with. Doesn't always mean anything. I guess you can always tie it back though. But this one, I can see it. It's the glow, you know, it makes sense if it's all going to be about Siri and Siri is just kind of this glowing light around your phone. Well, then I guess it makes plenty of sense. But yeah, there's really not much to that, you know, artwork. It's very, I don't want to say boring, but it's very minimal, very minimal.
Understated.
Understated is nice too. I like that. We haven't really talked a lot about the other betas, like what we can expect with iPadOS 27, macOS 27. There really hasn't been a lot.
I mean, it's all in on AI this year. I don't know that there's going to be a tremendous amount of space for those other features. And I imagine that the majority of what Apple unveils will be cross-platform. So one of the headline features that we'll get into here is the Siri app. Well, I don't think the Siri app is going to be exclusive to the iPhone.
No.
I think it's a near certainty that the Siri app is actually going to come to basically every device, probably with the exception of the Apple TV and the Apple Watch.
I'd love a Siri app on the Apple TV. You know, you're just sitting there and you need to, how many arguments do you have? Like, you know, not just you specifically, but people out there, you know, you're sitting and watching TV with your significant other and you're like, where do I know this person from? And like, you know, imagine being able to go down a rabbit hole of like, I don't know, filmographies and stuff, and being able to get all that information right then and there. You don't have to pull the second screen out. I don't know. That could be nice. You could have a little chat bot there. But yeah, probably not the Apple TV. What was the other one that you said? WatchOS? Can't imagine.
Yes.
Yeah, that would make sense.
We've got to be getting next generation Siri capabilities on all devices, certainly in the long run.
Sure.
But when it comes to the specific Siri app and this iMessage style interface, that is going to be on devices where you are going to actually be typing with a keyboard effectively. And I guess that includes visionOS one way or another.
Yeah, that makes sense. HomeOS for a tabletop wall-mounted smart home hub may also appear at this announcement for all the other software. Do you think that we will see the official HomeOS? And also, do we think that's really going to be the name, or is that just what they've been kind of internally calling it?
No, I think it's highly likely. I mean, we've been hearing rumors about HomeOS for years, and they're not just rumors, actually. We've seen this in official Apple job listings. We've seen it in lines of Apple's code. So whether they finally do launch with that name or not, I don't know. But I think it would make sense. I mean, what else are they going to call that? Something that runs across this array of new smart home devices. It wouldn't actually surprise me if this is just what tvOS gets renamed. I think that would actually make rather a lot of sense to consolidate those platforms. And it makes sense to show off that device and HomeOS at WWDC because it is supposed to be so focused on Apple Intelligence. Now, there's no way that they're going to be shipping this at least until the fall if they do unveil this product. But it isn't unusual for Apple to do things like that. I mean, the original HomePod was unveiled at WWDC and then shipped much later. And considering that this is a product that relies on Apple Intelligence so heavily, if the focus of this event is going to be Apple Intelligence, that kind of goes hand in hand. But we're not hearing rumors of that specifically, but it would make sense because this has been on the brink of launching for so long.
Yeah, I think because we haven't heard anything, I just don't know. I don't know if it's going to happen. It would be cool. That would make for, you know, we're not expecting to get hardware this year, I don't think, but like even just the unveiling of new hardware is exciting, even if it's not going to be ready yet. I mean, you mentioned the HomePod. Apple also did it with, you know, not really the same area, but with the Mac Pro and the Pro Display XDR. I believe that was in WWDC 2018. And then it came out later the end of the year in December. Was it 18 or 17? It was 18.
It was 19.
19. Ah, okay. Yeah, I got a... That's right. 19, and then that was it. That was the last in-person WWDC, right? It never happened again. Yes. That's sad. I know we've talked about this, but I really need John to bring it back. That would be epic if he can bring back. It doesn't have to be for every event, but it should be for at least, well, there's only two events. I was going to say WWDC and the iPhone. Those are really the only ones that happen on a regular, but like those micro events, like when they did the Mac Neo and stuff, that's fine. You can do like a media, you know, small in-person and then just have like a video that goes out. I think that would be okay. But for like WWDC where you're showing demos and things that, you know, need to work, that should be in-person. And I think the iPhone should also be in-person. And I'm not just saying, like, I know the media still goes to this, like, we're going to be there, but you should be live demoing these
yeah,
things.
Yeah, it's not the same. And
it's not.
We're not just saying that from the perspective of people that work in the media. I mean, the in-person events were actually before my time working at MacRumors, and I considerably preferred watching those events because you could feel the energy of the crowd. You could hear crowd reactions, which was very sincere. And also, you knew that these demos were live and things would not always go to plan.
Like when Steve Jobs had to tell everybody to turn off their Wi-Fi.
and things like that happened plenty over the years, which are, they're entertaining, but also it's so much more compelling if you are showing off something that really works in real time. That impresses people. Whereas a pre-recorded video, you can never be sure how much of that is edited in post. And how much of that is actually ready, as we have learned about Apple Intelligence specifically. Whereas I don't think that would have happened in the world of in-person events. And even the way that speakers at those events those events were not scripted. Very often, the little ad libs that individual speakers would add would add a lot of personality. And I think that that's what's lacking. I don't know if they'll ever come back in quite the way that they used to be held. But I would like to see more of a hybrid format, at least sometimes, to inject a bit more energy and personality. Personality does not mean having cool music and drone shots and jokes about
jumping out of
Craig Federighi's hair. Like, yeah, that is not character. I think that certainly I, at least, I can only speak for myself in this regard. I'm a bit over that now. And I want sincerity and authenticity, which is something that I feel is become a bit lacking, and things have become a bit sterile, even though Apple's become a bit more willing to poke fun at itself in a very safe and managed way, which isn't quite the same thing.
I thought Craig was funnier during the live demos than him doing these pre-recorded videos, because then it just becomes too try hard. It's like, you know, we got it. You got good hair, dude. I get it. Like, let's move on to a different joke. But I just thought they all had way more personality on stage, especially when things didn't go right. You know, you were right about that. It's like, okay, what is this? How does this person react under pressure when you've got thousands of people watching you in person and potentially hundreds of thousands of people watching live online? Like, how do you get yourself out of this? How do you showcase that this isn't, you know, a failed product, but just stuff that happens? I go back to that Steve Jobs, like when the Wi-Fi wasn't working well in the place that they were at, he's just like, all right, everyone needs to close their laptops for a minute so that we can get this to work. Like, could you imagine that now? I cannot imagine that happening now. People, I don't even know if people actually did that. I don't remember. Did they even listen to him, or were they just like, yeah, no, I'm
no,
not
I think
that.
So.
You think they listen? See, that's some power right there. So obviously, you know, WWDC 2026, it was official, but it's now confirmed June 8th. 10 a.m. Pacific. Then the rest of the conference runs from June 8th through the 12th. So if you are a developer and you're lucky enough to have won, if you haven't checked yet, but I'm guessing by now you probably know, the in-person lottery winners have been notified. So you should make sure you check your email. If you're take advantage of the developer. I mean, we talk about this a lot, but take advantage of the developer offers that Apple gives you with this, because it is entirely free. And it used to cost like thousands of dollars, I think, to attend in person beforehand. And now, because of all this, one of the greatest impacts of COVID and going to this non-in-person is that you get this information for free. So if you're up and coming developer, or even if you just are in the industry and you need to learn some new stuff, like, take advantage of it. It is free if you are a developer. So technically it's $99. You know, you kind of have to sign up for it. But then you get access to the betas, which, by the way, will drop on June 8th after the event. You'll have all of the developer beta previews so you can try out the new Siri in theory if it's ready to go. I will be doing videos, a bunch of them. Hartley will be writing articles. So stay locked into Mac Rumors. And let's take a quick minute, though, before we jump into our next topic to hear from today's sponsor. I've been using Claude a lot lately in a way that honestly goes beyond just, you know, randomly asking AI questions. For Mac Rumors, we're constantly juggling news coverage, podcast prep on my end, scripts for my videos, research, and just trying to stay on top of dozens of leaks and reports all happening at once on a daily basis. And what I found really useful about Claude is that it actually feels like a thinking partner instead of just a chatbot that's spitting out surface level answers. A good example is when we're preparing for a big Apple event, and we have WWDC coming up right around the corner. So I'll dump a bunch of reports, rumors, analyst notes, and my own thoughts into Claude, and then ask it to help identify patterns or contradictions across everything. It's surprisingly good at connecting the dots and helping me think deeper about a topic instead of just giving me a quick summary. And honestly, sometimes I'll tend to just ask it from my phone while I'm out and about, and come back later to find a full outline of research documents waiting for me on my Mac. Claude is AI for the minds that don't stop at good enough. It's the collaborator that actually understands your entire workflow and thinks with you, whether you're debugging code at midnight or strategizing your next business move. Claude extends your thinking to tackle the problems that matter. One feature that I've especially liked is not only just the research side of things, but Claude Cowork. I know that I'm late to the game on this, but I've just started using it and having it organize things on my Mac. it writes code for me and, you know, kind of gives it a prompt and is now organizing all of my downloads folder on a weekly basis so that it doesn't get chaotic in there, because there was thousands of items in my downloads folder, tons of gigabytes of storage that I could get rid of pretty easily. And it took me absolutely no work at all. Claude did everything for me. And if you're someone who works across a ton of apps and services, the connectors are genuinely useful. Companies like Stripe, Shopify, and Pfizer trust Anthropic with the rollout of their AI in their businesses. And after using it ourselves, it's easy to see why. For problems worth solving, get started with Claude at claude.ai/Mac. That's claude.ai/Mac. And check out Claude Pro, which includes access to all of the features that's mentioned in today's episode. Thanks, Claude, for sponsoring this episode.
Capital One's tech team isn't just talking about multi-agentic AI. They already deployed one. It's called Chat Concierge, and it's simplifying car shopping. Using self-reflection and layered reasoning with live API checks, it doesn't just help buyers find a car they love. It helps schedule a test drive, get pre-approved for financing, and estimate trade-in value. Advanced, intuitive, and deployed. That's how they stack. That's technology at Capital One.
So we mentioned WWDC, obviously. The invites are official. It's a few weeks away. One of the things that Apple likes to do recently is before the event, you start to see some official iOS 27 features be released. And it's usually in the accessibility area. We've seen this in years past. We get kind of some previews of new things that are going to be coming. And it's kind of cool to see. And unfortunately, they can't really spend a ton of time talking about this on stage. So you get a lot of the stuff that's really cool, but didn't quite make it. They get their own videos. And so we had an annual tradition of the, you know, falls on Global Accessibility Awareness Day. And so we saw previews. And one of them, we'll start with VoiceOver Image Explorer, which uses Apple Intelligence to describe images, can scan your bills or personal records throughout the system. Just makes VoiceOver a lot more powerful, which is kind of cool to see. What were your thoughts on that, Harley?
Well, I think it's interesting, first of all, that almost all of these features are Apple Intelligence powered, which is good to see. Finally, adding some meat to the bone of Apple Intelligence, and really in places where it seems kind of obvious and particularly useful. So with Image Explorer, what this will do is it will describe what is actually on screen. So if you're a user with low vision or vision issues, then now your device can actually describe to you the picture you were just sent on iMessage, exactly what you're looking at. So that is a very powerful feature day-to-day for people who need that.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a ton of, honestly, really good features for people who need this. The action button can now prompt questions about what your camera sees. Basically, it kind of seems like a lot of these features, especially the ones where you're looking at your camera, it's like what Google uses with Gemini, where you're saying, hey, what am I looking at? And it gives you that. But specifically targeted for those who can't really see those things in real life, which is great. I like a lot of these features, and the fact that, you know, even Magnifier is getting Apple Intelligence powered visual descriptions. I mean, like, it's crazy.
So now you can point your iPhone at what you're seeing and have that described to you. So if you're a blind user, that is incredibly powerful. You receive a document in the mail, you want to know what it is, you can point your iPhone at it and have it read back to you with a sort of vivid, detailed description. It's not just transcribing. I mean, you can point it at anything and it will describe it for you.
Do you think any of this kind of points to what we're expecting with Siri? Like, do you think from a non-accessibility point of view, are we going to get some of these features?
Some of it does. I mean, it's all related, because the interesting thing about Apple's accessibility features is that very often people who actually don't need those features tend to find them useful in one way or another, or there is some kind of crossover. So obviously, image recognition is useful to all users. And we've seen hints of this, say, like if you receive an image and you have your AirPods in and you have announced notifications, then Siri can describe what that image is for you. So that is just one example of that sort of feature being particularly useful. Another one that stands out is voice control is getting a lot more powerful with natural language interactions. So previously, if you wanted to control your iPhone using voice only, that feature has existed for years, but you would have to be very precise about what exactly you were talking about. And there were labels for individual buttons on the screen, and you would have to give pretty much the exact names of what you were looking at. But with natural language, now users will be able to just speak freely and describe things as broadly as they can, and the device should understand, which makes that an enormous amount more accessible. And that does relate to mainstream use of Apple Intelligence, because of course we are expecting it to get on-screen awareness. And there may be times like when you're driving with CarPlay or when you're controlling a device from across the room where that kind of application does become particularly useful.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of just really nice accessibility features that are coming. And it makes me really excited for the Siri stuff, honestly. I know we've talked about it quite a bit, but it's going to be the big news for the foreseeable future, because not only do we have a lot of speculation right now, but in a couple of weeks, we're going to have confirmation, which is really great. And then we'll have demos and things that we can talk about even further. And then a few months after that, it's going to be coming to your phones. Fingers crossed, hopefully. You know, there's some things that are potentially going to be delayed, which we'll talk about later in this episode that I'm not super thrilled about. But let's just jump back into the Siri aspect of it all, because yes, we have a lot of these accessibility features are using Apple Intelligence. What part of that is going to be going into Siri? And I don't know when was the last time we've mentioned Siri on this podcast, but there's been quite a bit of new information coming out. I think we've mentioned that it is planning to be overhauled into a full chatbot to compete with ChatGPT, Claude, and Gemini. Somebody asked me why we don't use Grok in that, like whenever we talk about, you know, ChatGPT, Claude, Gemini, it's like, why isn't Grok thrown in there?
I use Grok sometimes.
You do?
I do use Grok sometimes. I currently will use a mixture of Gemini, ChatGPT, Claude, and Grok, and I use them all for slightly different things.
What do you use Grok for?
Because Grok is plugged into X, so it can provide you with a lot more real-time information and what is trending in real-time. And I also think that occasionally you do hit walls with other chatbots about what they won't say. And because Grok is a lot more unfiltered, if you find that you're hitting those walls inadvertently, which does happen from time to time, it can be useful to use something where it's just a little bit more hands-off.
Do you use the Grok standalone app?
Yes, I do. It's not often. It's probably my least used of those four. But there are occasions when I'm not getting a great response from ChatGPT. And if I want an analysis of, I don't know, my journal or something, and it's personal information, I might hit those walls with ChatGPT, but you would not hit those with Grok. And I also hear that for things like personal therapy, which is a really big growing use that people use chatbots for, the Grok is quite useful for that, because it's willing to discuss those kinds of personal topics that sometimes ChatGPT and Gemini get a little bit cautious of.
Yeah, I mean, that I definitely know. So I've used, Grok could get kind of freaky sometimes. I've seen some clips online, which, you know, you're bringing up a very serious point, and I do think it is good for that. But then there are some just wild things that I've seen online. Then I was curious. I'm like, is this real? And I've tested it in my car. It's willing to just talk about whatever you want to talk about. I have never used the standalone app. I don't think I've ever used it aside from in my car, which it has potential. I don't think it always works super well, which is a little frustrating. But I just don't know that I would ever use it. I'm going to be honest with you. Aside from literally when I'm on X, I'm still going to call it Twitter. When I'm on Twitter, and because I'm too embarrassed to at Grok and ask if it's true, I know someone else will do it. And so I immediately read the comments and then just see if it's true, because nowadays I have to question everything on the internet. Anyways, Siri is supposed to be another one of these next in line. hopefully. I don't know why I have such skepticism about it. I just don't, like, in my mind. Well, I mean, Siri's,
it's
going to
be powered by Gemini,
never
so
be. Well,
it's
exactly,
effectively
even
just
then,
Gemini.
Even then, I'm like, I don't know, man. Siri has never been anything close to what Google has put out. And now what we have with OpenAI and with Anthropic's Claude, which, by the way, I have never used. I'm a really bad AI person. I think this is the most boomer thing I have about me, is that I use AI, and I use it for very specific elements of my job. And I'll definitely use ChatGPT as like another way to Google things and like organize stuff for me and stuff like that. But I don't really dive super into what you can do. There's a lot of really good stuff you can do. I just now hooked up Claude to my Mac to like use for things on my, like have it control things on my Mac. I've been using it before for the same way I use ChatGPT, getting information, having it generate images and stuff like that. I just now had it go through my downloads folder and organize stuff and like put it in folders and have it review for deletion and all that. I felt like such an old person being like, wow, this was great. What have I been doing my whole life? Like, why haven't I even tried to do this before? Do you think Siri is going to be at that level and be able to do all this? I would hope so.
I don't think so. I think that one thing at a time, and that has got to be a basic chatbot first. I mean, what we're seeing in terms of actually integrating with the file system and it being able to do that destructively as well, it seems to be a preserve of Claude code and more recently of ChatGPT's Codex. But I think that considering that Gemini is not quite that capable yet, and this Siri is going to be based on Gemini, it is going to be far more in the realms of conducting search and sort of synthesizing those results and being able to answer a far wider array of questions. And hopefully, it's easy to forget in all of this that basic functionality is also quite important. I really hope that it will work with the Maps app better when I am driving. I hope that it will work better with controlling the smart home or adjusting settings, things that I actually do try to use Siri for, and often to not a huge amount of success.
But like, the chatbot stuff, I'm not at all dismissing it. Like, I want that. But I think where it makes the most sense is for, you have this entire ecosystem. You have macOS, you have iPadOS, you have iOS, and like the ability to be able to go in there and control things that are probably harder for basic users to go in and write a script for. Like, I don't know how to do, I don't have the patience to do that. I can probably figure it out, but I don't want to. And the fact that I can ask Claude, a third-party app, to get in there and do it for me is great, but wouldn't that be something that I should just, with natural language, be able to tell Siri to do on your own platforms? I think that would be the goal first. Chatbots are great, but being able to make your life even easier with the devices that you're already using, to me, makes more sense than anything else. But one step at a time.
I think that will come, but I think ordinary users only just discovering the utility of chatbots. Yeah. And the power of having an app called Siri that comes pre-installed on your device is what will actually be useful to the vast majority of average users. And I mean, I could see, for example, this replacing my use of Gemini. I don't know why I would necessarily need to have Siri powered by Gemini and Gemini on my device if Siri itself is plugged into more context. So That is progress. That would mean I have a better sort of AI selection of tools than I have today, because undoubtedly this will be Apple's take on that. It is not just a reskinned version of Gemini. There will be unique integrations with first-party apps. I mean, I'm certainly expecting a lot from its integration with Calendar, Reminders, Apple Music, activity rings. I want to be able to really make any query about personal information, including things like my iMessages. I want to be able to say, what did I discuss with this person yesterday over message? And for it to be able to summarize that answer quickly. Nothing else can do that right now. And that would be the unique place of a Siri chatbot in the first instance.
Yeah. And it'll be interesting to know what this app looks like, or to see what this app looks like. And we have some idea, or at least one. And before we get into that, though, let's take another short break to hear from another sponsor.
Capital One's tech team isn't just talking about multi-agentic AI. They already deployed one. It's called Chat Concierge, and it's simplifying car shopping. Using self-reflection and layered reasoning with live API checks, it doesn't just help buyers find a car they love. It helps schedule a test drive, get pre-approved for financing, and estimate trade-in value. Advanced, intuitive, and deployed. That's how they stack. That's technology at Capital One.
So one of the rumors that we saw, and honestly, did you see the like patent from years ago about Siri kind of looking like, it's supposed to look like a messages,
yes,
basically an iMessage style chat bubble app, you know? And there was a patent years ago that pretty much outlines the exact same thing that we're expecting. So that's kind of cool that I don't remember how many years ago, but I feel like it was nearly 10 plus, right? Or was it when first Siri came out? I don't know if it was that far back, but
I'm not sure, but it makes sense because iMessage is such an iconic, well-received app and its design is so familiar. I think that it's very easy for users to be able to engage with that because of its familiarity. I think it's the obvious place to start. But we've had some other details here. Some of them relate to Siri actually moving to the dynamic island, which to me makes perfect sense because that way it's always kind of up there and it can expand from the dynamic island over the content that you are looking at. And then you can go apparently and tap into that and pull it down to get a more complete selection of results and also the actual the chat feed. And the actual Siri app itself will store all of these chats pretty similar to any other chatbot app. But one of the sort of unique points that we've heard about just last week was that Apple is apparently going to really tout the ability to have these chats auto-expire. And I imagine that will be on by default, that after a month, these chats will automatically delete. And you can turn that off. But as a security and privacy feature, I think Apple wants to say, well, Google and ChatGPT might be harvesting all of your data from your chats and keep these things forever, but we are Apple and we don't need to do that. And we are more secure and more private. So while we'll use your most recent chats to provide you with memory and context, we don't need to be looking at what you were looking at 6 months ago. So we're just going to have that to delete by default.
Yeah, but I don't know. I like the ability of having it go back pretty far if I need to reference something.
I like
so
it
like,
too.
So, how does it store? How does it store? Can it store maybe memory of it, but not like the actual conversations itself? Like, if I tell it that I was recently diagnosed with, I don't know, something, and that was 6 months ago, and that chat was deleted, but then I'm like, hey, I just got a new test result. What is that? You know, just, I don't know if you can even do this, but just from that perspective, like how I would use ChatGPT and go back that far. That would be helpful. I don't want to have to teach it again. Like, hey, this is what I have going on.
That's why that will be a user configurable setting. And I think Apple is kind of ultimately grasping at straws here to come up with some points of differentiation from its competitors. And this is one that I think that they will have this in pretty big letters in the iOS 27 preview on the Apple website.
Oh, sure.
That these chats are auto-expiring, unlike every other AI chatbot app.
So we're expecting it in the dynamic island. We're expecting it to trigger a like search or ask prompt with the glowing cursor. And then translucent cards. That's an interesting design choice. You know, I'm guessing if you interact with the card, you'll be able to see the full kind of ordeal going on.
Yes, I would imagine so. I mean, I think that it actually... it's not really surprising because Apple's playing catch up here, but a huge amount of this does not seem all that dissimilar to what other competitors are offering. I think that one other interesting aspect is that apparently this app will actually still launch in beta in September.
Yeah.
It will still be considered a beta. So I do wonder how far things like this are going to be in beta one immediately after the keynote. I actually would not be surprised if the Siri app itself was not there. Maybe there'll be the other Apple intelligence features and we don't get that till beta 2 or beta 3. But I'm a little bit like you where I feel like we've been gaslit for so many years and we've had so much kind of trauma from this delay that we just don't believe that it's ever going to happen.
Well, here's the thing though. I don't know that you can't like not included in some way, shape. If it's in beta, that's fine. But like if it's replacing Spotlight Search, and then like the end game is like if you...
But those features might be there. It may just be the individual app that is not initially present. I mean, we okay. don't know.
So it'll still power the new Spotlight, because it's supposed to be like a whole new thing when you swipe down from the middle. But like if I need to get into something, that should offer that, right? You might not be able to go and check that in the Siri app, and that's fine, I guess. But I don't know.
Yeah, I agree. I think that... it's going to be very interesting to see how immediate this rollout is, because the rumor is if this still launches in beta, it's definitely not going to be totally ready by September. And with the other features you mentioned, with some of the capabilities of Claude Code, Claude Cowork, there's no way that Apple's going to be able to do things like that out of the gate. So it then even makes, I know we're only looking at WWDC this year, but it does make one wonder about, well, where will we be come iOS 28? Next year, and yeah. will then once Apple's had a bit of footing and time to iterate on these features, will there be serious catch up going on?
It'll be interesting to see. All we know, though, it's powered by Google Gemini, and Apple probably won't talk about that. Or they will? Will they mention it once, or are they legally allowed not to?
I
it's crazy.
I mean, they may say, oh, you know, the new Siri app is powered by Apple's amazing foundation models and all of the power of Google Gemini. And it will be some throwaway line, but I can't
think never
it'll be
talked about
that.
Again.
Yeah.
That's interesting, because I think Google did confirm that this was happening, but Apple never did, correct?
No, Apple did, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Both Apple
I couldn't
and
remember
Google
which ways.
Made separate announcements.
Okay. Then I feel like that's it. I feel like Apple will never talk about it again. They're like, we did our job. We're not going to mention that. But maybe they will. Who knows? It'll be interesting to see. All right. One last thing that we need to talk about. Speaking of potential delays, the iPhone Ultra, iPhone Fold, whatever you want to call it. We're seeing some things out there. Now, it is coming from, Weibo leaker, Instant Digital, who has... you know, a track record of being right, but also sometimes it's not always correct. And basically saying that trial production has hit a serious problem, and that, here we go, the hinge is not up to par with Apple's quality control. That's a pretty important part of the Fold, I would imagine. So how does this make you feel? I'm fully expecting this to just now. If this is true, I don't think we're seeing it this year, but I hope it's an overreaction.
I think we are going to see it still.
Good.
But I
Talk
think
me off
that
the ledge.
This explains some of the rumors we've heard about production difficulties and some amount of delay. But of course, a launch delay does not necessarily mean that it will be an announcement delay. This is a whole new iPhone, so Apple can very easily announce it and then not ship it for 2 months. And Mark Gurman did push back on the Nikkei report that said that it would not launch till 2027. And ultimately, I trust Mark Gurman. Everything has been moving toward this fall 2026 announcement and launch for so long that I would be shocked if that didn't happen. But what I would say is that if this is a quality control issue, that doesn't mean that that necessarily affects every unit. So it may well just reduce supply even further. And some of the rumors that have been coming out also seem to, when you really dig into them, they don't as such say that the phone won't be available, but it says that Apple won't be shipping very many of them. And some people have interpreted that to mean, well, they're not going to sell very many of them. And that's true. But that doesn't mean that it's not popular. It just means that it'll get dragged out. A little bit like the MacBook Neo, where there's very high demand and Apple can't make them fast enough. It is conceivable that this could be a very similar situation, that there'll be such tight supply of them when they launch that they'll just be very difficult to get hold of. But it doesn't sound great, but it isn't surprising. Apple hasn't made a hinge like this before. It has no experience of doing that. It is for a device that needs to be incredibly durable. It's a completely new mechanical design, very unlike anything that they've done before. So it's not hugely surprising that they're having difficulty with this. I think there are also rumors about it being made of liquid metal, which is something that Apple's experimented with in the past. It's done SIM ejector tools in that material, but it's never manufactured anything like this, if indeed it is made out of liquid metal. So there's a lot of firsts going on here. And I think it would not be hugely surprising if this is what is contributing to this delay. My current expectation would be that it still gets announced in September, but probably does not launch until October. And when it does launch, it is in very limited supply. But maybe that won't really matter, considering that the starting price is going to be north of $2,000 anyway, which is going to put a lot of potential customers off.
Yeah, I mean, we have over 2,000, one report citing 2,500, which is just insane. You're making it DOA, dead on arrival, right from then on. You cannot do that. Yeah, I mean, Apple will probably do that, but like, if you want it to succeed, I don't think you should do that. Because again, it's Vision Pro, it's just all over again in my eyes, and I really hope it's not, but I just think you're pricing out people who would genuinely be willing to try this, but not for that price point. I think $1,799 is the sweet spot. It's not going to be that much. Maybe the next generation will. We have to remember that Samsung's first gen was $2,000, I believe. So, you know.
And it's still $2,000 today.
Yeah, but at one point it did hit $1,799. And the Samsung is very, very good with deals and discounts almost immediately. Like if you, in some way, shape or form, you will save at least like $300 just right off the bat. They're very good at incentivizing. And then, you know, you do have carrier deals that'll happen. And so you won't likely be paying that full price just depending on how you pick it up. But yeah, I mean, I'm expecting this to be one of those, if you're not online at 8 a.m. Eastern, to pre-order, if you think you could just roll out of bed at, you know, 2 hours past due and be able to order it for launch day, you're going to be sadly mistaken. But I will reserve my doom and gloom, and I will stay in the sense that I agree with you, and I think it will most likely be like that, considering that that's kind of the reports that we've heard for the last few months anyways. But I'm a little nervous. I mean, if Apple's trying to do liquid metal and use things that's never been done before, a dual layer ultra thin glass to minimize the crease, which if you asked me last year, I would have said, well, wait a minute. I thought this was supposed to be crease free. Now we're minimizing the crease. Yeah. I still feel like we got duped by this whole thing, and I'm really upset about this. I want this to be crease free. What is the point? Is this just like every other foldable then? What's the point?
I feel like every single time we now mention the iPhone Ultra, it actually sends you into a state of pure rage every time.
I'm very upset about it because I've wanted a foldable for so long. I've been using them for 7 years now with Samsung, and I'm the only thing that I sit there thinking, and this is no disrespect to Samsung, it just doesn't run iOS. It doesn't fit into my ecosystem and what I use on a daily basis. And if I'm going to make the switch, I need it. I don't know. I'm not going to make the switch, and I'm not doing that right now. So I'm just a little upset that this was my chance to get, you know, and everybody else's. It's not just all about me, but
well,
everybody else
we don't
has
know
been
yet.
Wanting to do this.
It may be below $2,000, the most incredible iPhone you've ever seen with features that will
0%.
Blow your mind, and it will launch alongside the iPhone 18 Pro.
And you know what? I don't even care about the crease. I'm going to tell you that right now. I don't even care. It's just the fact that that's what Apple was Apple wasn't marketing this. We have to give them, we have to pull back. It's the fact that a lot of other people were marketing this for them in advance, saying that this was supposed to be crease free. And like, you know, it's disappointing. This is why I understand why Apple probably hates leaks getting out, because then they can't keep up with the reputation that other people are, you know, the things that they are trying to do on the inside that they haven't publicly announced to everybody. And then, you know, we kind of are like, what the heck, man? You promised us. They didn't promise us anything. So I have to take the step back. I will no longer harp on it. I'm going to wait and see what we get. Hopefully we see some features in WWDC, you know, some things that suggest that there's a foldable coming. You think that's going to happen? I know we've heard reports.
Capital One's tech team isn't just talking about multi-agentic AI. They already deployed one. It's called Chat Concierge, and it's simplifying car shopping. Using self-reflection and layered reasoning with live API checks, it doesn't just help buyers find a car they love. It helps schedule a test drive, get pre-approved for financing, and estimate trade-in value. Advanced, intuitive, and deployed. That's how they stack. That's technology at Capital One.
I think it's, I mean, certainly in the keynote, I think it's near impossibility. I think what the thing to watch out for will be like in the State of the Union or in little developer videos that they release that talk about things like scaling your iPhone app for larger display sizes, or whether you should package your iPad app and iPhone app together if they're separate. And in fact, that should now be one single unit, because some developers do sell an iPad version separately to the iPhone version. It's not the same app. Maybe that will become against Apple's rules and you will have to roll it into one app and one purchase. Little things like that to me would give it away, but without making headlines, because I don't think Apple obviously wants to do that yet. It wants to wait until this device has its time to shine properly.
I agree. I think the sleuths out there will find it. You know, MacRumors will have some reports for sure on it. But all right, well, that's what we're expecting so far. That's been the news. It's very much WWDC heavy. I don't know what next week's going to hold, but probably more WWDC stuff. And then guess what? The following week, probably getting there too. And then definitely the week after, because it'll be WWDC. But we'll try to spice it up, because even I am going to get WWDC out.
We'll do a golf episode.
Dude, I mean, let's do it. Can we find golf tech, Apple related? I got tons of that. You know,
I know you've got it. I know you don't need to ask me if there is any. I know that you know there's loads.
If you guys are interested, you can just search Dan Barbera in YouTube, and there's a personal channel of mine where you can see some reviews of golf tech, because that's my midlife crisis that I chose for myself. So, yeah.
It's a great and popular midlife crisis.
It is. Happy Friday, everyone. And we'll talk to you guys next week.